The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning, Shavua Tov. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. There's a lot to talk about this morning, but I feel compelled to start with Eurovision, because I think that whether you like the Eurovision competition or not, I think there are so many things that we can take, so many takeaways that we have from Yuval Rafael's amazing performance on Saturday evening, and of course the fact that she managed to secure second place in the most unlikely sort of way. So I think when we just think about Yuval and the journey that she's traveled over the last 19 months, and when we think that just over 19 months ago she was lying under a pile of dead bodies at the Nova site in one of those shelters of death, which is what we call them now, because so many people were killed in there, trying to do whatever she can to survive and getting help from her father on the phone, who was guiding her to say, be quiet, lie still, don't move, pretend that you're dead so that you'll be able to survive. And from that to rise to the stage in Basel on Saturday evening was just an incredibly emotional journey. And it sort of, for me, epitomizes the famous Jabotinsky anthem, where he wrote, from the pits of decay and dust, with blood and sweat, shall arise a race. That was Yuval on Saturday evening, presenting Israel in spite of the protests, in spite of people in the audience trying to put her off her pace, paint being thrown apparently on members of the crew from protesters in the audience. And the song that she sang, New Day Will Rise, is just the most incredibly positive song that you could imagine, not even considering the circumstances, but especially considering the circumstances. And listeners will have observed that there was one stanza, there is one stanza in French, and there is a very short stanza in Hebrew. And the stanza in Hebrew has been lifted from Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs, which is the famous love poem that King Solomon wrote and that we traditionally recite on Pesach every year. And it says, Ma'im rabim lo yichabu et ahava v'naharot lo yishtvo'o. Great waters cannot extinguish love and rivers cannot wash it away. That kind of epitomizes not only the message of the song, but also it kind of brings the link, the biblical linking for us, because we as a people are linked to the Bible and we are linked to our land also through the Bible. And that for me kind of triangulates everything that was being presented on Saturday evening. And of course, the fact that the jury vote showed that so few countries supported Israel. Many, many countries didn't even give Israel any points. And yet, when the public was allowed to express their view, the public overwhelmingly voted in favor of Israel, especially some of those countries like Spain, where the government wrote to ask about whether Israel should even be entitled to participate in the Eurovision. And yet, when the general public gave their view, then the vote was overwhelming in favor of Israel. And there are people who say second place in the Eurovision is best, because you get all the credit, the accolades, the public support, and you don't have to host the event next year.
I was actually thinking that it's a bit of a relief in a way, because it would only make it a little bit more difficult if Israel was to host next year's Eurovision.
Yeah,
it just would.
I agree.
The other thing, you know, the other observation was: can you imagine if she wasn't Israeli? When you think about the story of lying under dead bodies 19 months ago, as terrorists tried to kill her and everybody around, to go from that to Eurovision, if she wasn't Israeli, can you imagine how the world press would have turned her into an icon? She would have been, if she wasn't Jewish, she would have been an absolute, she would have been on the front page of every newspaper and magazine around the world because of her story. And yet,
I'm sure you're right. And yet for us, she's an icon. And for people who recognize it and are willing to recognize it, she will be an icon. And of course, it was Karen Pellis's words that she sang. But, you know, she really epitomized every single word, the positivity, the radiance that she presented, not only gave us a lot of credit and gave us a moment of pride, which we could very much use under these circumstances, but the results were incredibly surprising to many of us because, you know, there was this expectation that the general public would turn against Israel if one believes everything that you read in the press about the anti-Semitism and the general feeling of the public, then that would have been the moment that people would have been able to express their views if they had wanted to do so. And yet the opposite was exactly the case. And ironically, just at the moment when the Eurovision was coming to its end and the final results were being announced, many of us in Israel were in our bomb shelters because the Houthis decided to fire missiles at us exactly at that moment. So there were many people in their bomb shelters watching and listening for the final results just to see what would end up, because it was quite exciting at the end for those who managed to stay up and watch it. But we all woke up and went to our bomb shelters. We understand that one of the Houthi missiles was in fact intercepted, this time by Iron Dome, as far as I can make out, not too far from Israeli shores, in fact quite close to Israel. We understand that a second missile was launched at the same time that was intended for the area around Ben Gurion Airport, but apparently fell somewhere in Saudi Arabia. So in spite of the so-called ceasefire that the Houthis have declared, at least with the US, apparently there is no ceasefire with us.
Nope. The IDF has launched Operation Gideon's Chariots in the Gaza Strip. What's going on here?
It doesn't really flow off the tongue, does it? Gideon's Chariots.
They needed to work on that, but it doesn't matter.
Merkavot Gidon. That's the Mivtza Merkavot Gidon is the Hebrew term. Maybe there are biblical scholars out there who would be able to help me to understand what the link is between Gideon and chariots, because as far as I know from Judges, Gideon is linked with swords and with spears, but not really with chariots. So I haven't quite got the whole link. But hot off the press and breaking news this morning, rumors, and I'm flashing this as a rumor. Please understand that the piece that I'm going to tell you next is not confirmed by any Israeli source. And in fact, the IDF has denied it. And yet the rumors are persisting that this morning there are attempts to rescue hostages in the Khan Yunus area going on as we speak. Now, again, I'm emphasizing that these are rumors. The source of the rumors comes from the Arabia network, the Arab language news, which is reporting people from the sources that they're getting from within Gaza. People are saying that there's been such a significant attack carried out by the IDF in the Khan Yunus area this morning that it seems as if though some of that at least was cover fire for a major operation which has been launched, and there is speculation and rumors that there is an attempt to try to rescue hostages. One of the radio announcers on the radio program that I was listening to a little earlier said, Alev Batachtonim, which literally interpreted says that my heart is in my underwear. Mm. And if we were to say it more elegantly in English, my heart is in my boots.
Right.
Because the risk of undertaking an attempt to rescue hostages is probably the highest level of risk that we can think about for an IDF operation. Not only the risk to our soldiers, but of course the risk to our hostages, because we know that those people who are holding hostages have been instructed to kill if they feel that there is any possibility that some sort of an operation is being mounted to rescue the people who are being held by them. And so I certainly hope that if indeed these rumors are borne out and if they are true, and we don't know anything about their truth or not. But if they do happen to be true, that these attacks have been carried out with pinpoint intelligence accuracy, that somehow those people who are responsible for holding the hostages can be neutralized very, very quickly before they're able to realize what's going on and before they're able to bring harm, further harm, to the hostages under their care. So our prayers and our wishes are that these rumors may be true, and that ultimately there will be some good news that we can talk about later. But I'd like just to emphasize again for those people who have just joined in that these are just rumors. There is no substance at all. And in fact, the IDF has gone out denying this, which I think they would do, because even if they were true, they wouldn't wish this to be circulated in the national press, which it has been. I've seen it mentioned in a few of the newspapers. So Gideon's chariot is now underway. And the question is, what are we trying to do? What is the purpose? What is the strategy that is being followed here by the IDF and by Israel to launch a new offensive against Gaza and to potentially bring the wrath of the world down even further on Israel and on the IDF about carrying out a genocide and denying humanitarian aid and all of the accusations that we've become so accustomed to over the past 19 months? Let me just remind listeners that there would be a very, very simple way to end this war right away. And the simple way is release the hostages. Just allow our people to come home, to release those who are alive, to repatriate those bodies of the people who have been killed along the way or who have died. And that will bring the end to this war. It's really just the easiest way to go about things. And for those people who are great believers in bringing an end to the war, that surely should be their priority in terms of concentrating on what is achievable. Instead, Israel is being held up as being responsible for wanting to bring its people home and for wanting to secure a peaceful living environment for its citizens. And again, I think that that is a right that we all have, and that is an obligation that every government has to bring to their people, is to allow them to live in peace and security. And we know that while Hamas are still operating in Gaza and still have access to arms and still have any power in Gaza, we know that Israel will not be safe and secure. That's just one of the things that we've learned amongst many over the last 19 months. So we do sometimes just have to step back for a moment and just to understand the big picture. I know that there are many, many arguments that can be brought about individual incidents, about attacks against hospitals, which the BBC blew up. And I noticed that you also carried on some of your social media feed, Howard. But of course, it turns out that again, in that hospital, there were terrorist leaders operating, which was not mentioned in the BBC report, coincidentally and conveniently. So there are certain little details which I agree could be better and could be more favorable. And you would absolutely have to trust my word when I say that Israelis want peace and security for the innocent civilians in Gaza as much as we want it for ourselves, that we have no desire to destroy the Gazan people, but we do have a desire to destroy the threat against us. And Operation Gideon's Chariots is designed to put a death knell, to really bring an end to Hamas and to their rule in Gaza, and to bring our hostages home. And the war cannot end until those two objectives have been reached. And I believe that this push is potentially the last push, having softened the enemy
That's a
significantly over the
sense,
19 months, just to push it to the end.
There's definitely that feeling that this is the excuse me, this is the climax. This is where it is all coming to a head now, especially with negotiations happening. At the same time, there is definitely the sense that that this is the culmination of it all. While this is all happening, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has come under criticism for agreeing yesterday to renew supplies of aid to Gaza without a cabinet decision. What can we understand from this?
Well, I think there are a few things that we can understand from this. First of all, this idea of humanitarian aid is being held up around the world. You know, the starving Gazans and Israel, the evil power that is preventing humanitarian aid from getting to Gaza. Now, it should be understood that Israel is indeed preventing aid from going to Gaza. Nobody has denied that, except that one has to understand that there is sufficient food that is being stockpiled in Gaza for people to continue to live seemingly quite comfortably. I know that the prices have been impacted, and there are many opportunists in Gaza who have stockpiled food and have kept it away, bags of flour, in significant storage, many of whom are being operated by Hamas, in order to take advantage of this situation and to try and scam the local population. Would you believe that they are scamming each other, trying to hide flour away so that the price will go up tomorrow and then making more money under these circumstances? And of course, Israel is being blamed for all of that, which, you know, we've come to understand and expect, and this comes as no surprise. However, with the release of Edan Alexander last week, it was understood that the U.S. government did say to Hamas that they would place pressure on Israel to allow greater humanitarian aid into Gaza. And I emphasize that even though they've been threatening that the lights are going to go out and that the oil supplies are going to run out, this is a bit of a Hanukkah miracle that's happening in Gaza, because about 2 weeks ago, we were told that they had enough oil supply for 3 days, and the lights have stayed on, and all of the electricity continues to operate, in spite of the fact that the oil was due to have run out in 3 days. So we know that Hamas is stockpiling, and they are controlling the flow, and they are bringing suffering to their citizens in order to make Israel look bad on the international stage. But also, the Americans have now succeeded somehow in pressurizing the prime minister to such a degree to allow him to force him to allow humanitarian aid into Gaza. The prime minister clearly didn't bring this to a cabinet decision, because he knows that his cabinet would say no. They would simply not agree, because this is part of the pressure that's being applied to Hamas. Now, perhaps the prime minister knew something yesterday about what would be happening over the coming days, which would allow him to say, even without a cabinet decision, and even knowing that this will somehow loosen the pressure and the control over Hamas, I'm going to allow this humanitarian aid into Gaza just in order to appease the U.S. pressure. And by the way, we should emphasize that Israel did allow certain supplies of oil and basic commodities into Gaza, even during this time that they were being accused of denying humanitarian aid. So I think that what we saw yesterday was the prime minister saying, let's try to appease the U.S. pressure, because I think that that became significant without going to the cabinet, because they're definitely going to say no. So you wouldn't ask a question when you're in danger of getting the wrong answer, but just allow some humanitarian aid in and let's see what happens next. And we're into the next now. Tomorrow morning, I guess we will talk about whatever has been happening this morning. That's all this under this cloud of dust and secrecy. I hope that we will have some good news to report.